All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and speaking to you from the Borough of Queens. It is the 15th day of February, 2023. My guests today are Michael Oliver and Patrick Highsmith. Patrick is the president and CEO of Timberline Resources, and he'll be joining me in the second segment of today's show. I've titled today's show, The Battle Between FANG and BANG. The definition perhaps is in order. FANG stocks is a group of stocks, the big high-tech companies, companies like Amazon, Netflix, Google. Meta is in there. The BANG stocks are three large gold miners that the household name companies like Barrick, Agnico Eagle, and Newmont Mining. So the two different sectors, and one has been, you know, very, very famous. Everybody knows about the FANG stocks. The BANG stocks, not so familiar with most investors. The FANG stocks are down some 80% in terms of their cash flow, free cash flow over the last 5 years, collectively, I'm talking. But the market cap is down only 35% or thereabouts. On the other hand, the BANG stocks, the gold miners, are doing quite well. They're up, their free cash flow is up two times over the last 5 years. They've doubled. And yet the share prices haven't gone very far. So we really want to see what Michael has to say. Michael, I'm so glad you're with me once again. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Jay. Good to be back.
It's always good to have you. And I should always tell our listeners it's olivermsa.com, olivermsa.com to sign up for Michael's work, which I highly recommend you do. Very, very helpful to me as an investor. And so really happy to have Michael with us whenever he's available. Michael, you follow these big major companies to a certain extent. I see you put out your technical analysis on the FANGs and on the BANGs. What's your impression of these two sectors? I mean, one is doing really well fundamentally. The other one is sort of topped out, hasn't done anything the last 5 years. And yet it seems like most of the money is going to the FANGs, not the BANGs.
Well, you know, it's people make errors, investors and analysts. And, you know, they chased the trend on the FANG for so long and drove it off the page. I mean, so the NASDAQ 100, which represents the FANG or like the constitute probably 50% or so of the NASDAQ 100 symbols. Okay. So it went up 16 fold between 2009 low and the 2021 high. I mean, we've never had a bubble like that in US stock market history for an index. S&P only went up 7 fold. I say only, you know. Now it's broken. As far as we're concerned, the bubble is broken. The only issue is in what manner does it decline? Mm-hmm. And the FANGs, like you said, are down like 30 plus percent this year, 35%. And that relative to the fundamentals of those stocks, that's probably not enough. Okay, well, we understand that. But, you know, emotion goes into a lot of this.
Yeah.
Some of these data points, even hard data points, don't matter that much. It's a matter of herd instinct.
Right.
And the herd got long this stuff and was rewarded for so long by being long this stuff. And so when it breaks, it's hard for them to give it up. And when you get a false little rally like we've had for the last couple of months, they feel all encouraged that the game is back on. And, you know, they ignore all the data points you just said. Go to the gold stocks. Yes, they're undervalued. This is true with many assets that get beat up and yet don't justify the degree to which they got beat up and have underlying fundamentals that are pent up positive. And yet the public doesn't recognize it. So it's not just an issue of is it a fact, what you just said? It is. It's do people recognize it and do they act upon it? And to some extent, that takes some sort of herd movement to attract the attention toward the bank stocks. Yeah. We do know that the gold miners and particularly the big ones lately, the ones in the Bang group there,
right,
had a huge percent decline, while gold had a from top tick to bottom tick of the range of the last 2 years was a 20% pullback. It wasn't a crash, it was 20%. It took them from, March 2022, seconded the high, went up to 2070, and dropped 20% to 1613. Now we pop back up closer to the highs recently. Now we're 1860s, well off that low.
Mm-hmm.
And it meanwhile, the mining stocks, while they're not back, they didn't go back up near their highs recently, but on a percentage basis off of the low they made this summer and fall,
right,
was a bigger gain on a percent basis than was the gold recovery.
Mm-hmm.
So it's our argument that as the gold turnaround is underway, and we think it is, and this pullback does not at all negate that statement, the miners will beat gold,
mm-hmm,
on a percentage basis. In other words, if you own a group of miners or own gold, you'll do better owning the miners over the next couple of years than you will with gold. And at some point, no doubt, I suspect Bang will become a commonplace term, popular term. Mm-hmm. You maybe even see it on CNBC and Fox Business, you know.
Yeah.
But that's a psychological herd instinct type thing that will take a while to get going. And once it gets going, that's not where you want to be joining in. Okay. That's where you invite the public in, but you want to already have your position established. And we think if you didn't do it as it was coming up off those lows, August, September lows, then exploit this pullback. Because we think this pullback is a pullback within an uptrend. So don't treat it like one of the drops that we had from March to the summer.
Right.
This is not. This is a drop within the context of an upside. Sooner or later, the public will get all excited by it, and that the Bang will become a popular term, and that'll be great.
So we're really seeing a counter trend rally here in your view, both, I guess, with gold as well. What will it take to see things turn around to the upside for the metal?
the counter trend, as far as we're concerned, is the decline right now. Okay. The trend is now turned positive. We turned in various layers of buy signals coming, yeah, up off the August, September lows, depending on whether we're looking at gold stocks or silver or gold. We had breakouts using our different tools, not just one magic symbol or a signal, but, yeah, layers. And so, most of those layers are well below the markets. They're, mm-hmm, below the current silver price. They're below we ran a 50-day or a 10-week average oscillator of gold, and it gave a major breakout signal, mm-hmm, coming up to the high 1600s, approaching 1700. So merely 80 some odd dollars off of its summer low, it was breaking out.
Mm-hmm.
That breakout surged you up to 1950. Now we're trading 90 bucks off that 1950 level. But this pullback is as far as we're concerned, is a buy. The question is precisely which day and so forth. We analyze that type of stuff,
yeah,
and try to narrow it down. But broadly speaking, I would define this pullback as an opportunity to enter on the long side, not time to be re-fearful of gold and the miners.
Yeah, and it's precisely that kind of narrowing down, giving you a better window, a clearer window on when it might be time to pull the trigger or to sell or buy. So it's very helpful. That's OliverMSA.com. Again, just putting in a plug for Michael because he's been a wonderful guest over the years, my radio show and now on YouTube. Michael, I've sort of noticed you've turned a bit bullish on some things. I know they're not your favorite sectors, but Bitcoin. You must be seeing something in the technicals.
Because I'm
a real big fan of Bitcoin.
Yeah. Our record on Bitcoin is probably better than any market out there. MSA has been pretty good on most every single market. But on Bitcoin, we called them up move in 2021 that went from like under 10,000 to 70,000. And when it dropped back down through about 55,000, there were a couple sell signals we issued, 55,000, I think in the mid 40s as well. And we didn't turn positive again until about 4 or 5 weeks ago after Bitcoin came up off that 15,000 area and traded up into the 19,000s. At that point, we had a sufficient number of momentum, not price chart, momentum structural breakouts to say, okay, it's time to favor the upside again. Now, are we pounding the table and claiming it's going to do another berserk move like it did in 2021? No. Okay. But I do think it's found life again. I think it's been beat up as much as you can get beat up technically and also with the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anybody who's been in Bitcoin and held during that decline is so washed out now, they don't even want to think about it again.
Yeah.
You know, they'll never get back in.
Yeah.
But our analysis is that the upturn we've recently seen is positive enough for us to say, yes, the bias now is positive zigzags rather than negative. Again, we're not that excited by it in terms of, is this a special place to be?
Right.
We favor, for example, as Bitcoin was topping early last year, at that point, we ran a spread chart, a relative performance chart between gold and Bitcoin, because a lot of the ads back then you'd see on TV said, oh, you should own Bitcoin, not gold, yeah. You know. And in fact, there was a point at which, and it was, I think it was when Bitcoin was in the 40,000s or 50,000s,
you're right,
starting down, that spread broke out favoring gold.
Uh-huh.
And sure, if you shorted Bitcoin then and bought gold, you'd be doing quite well.
Yeah.
And that spread has not changed. It still favors gold.
Yeah.
So I think that our favorite arena now is the monetary metals, gold, but especially silver.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, recently, silver's had more of a pullback than gold.
Mm-hmm.
But net on balance, if you look at the low silver made this summer, the low gold made, and then see the peak of the rally, you'll see silver beat the pants off gold on a yeah. percentage basis.
Yeah.
So silver's back in a leadership position in terms of which of the two.
Uh-huh.
And I also think that's true with the miners. I think that you should, going forward, watch gold. But rather than using gold as your primary vehicle, I would use silver and gold miners.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know that
other markets. You were mentioning other markets.
Yeah, emerging markets. I noticed you.
Bloomberg yeah. Commodity Index.
Okay. Yes.
The broad category. We think there's an entire another leg to come in the commodity category, major up leg. And if you go back and examine what happened, we put out a buy signal in October of 2020. Bloomberg Commodity Index then was just moving above 70 points. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It surged up to 140, so it doubled. But it reached that peak 1 week after the invasion, the Russia-Ukraine war began.
Right.
So a lot of people think the commodity move was caused by the Ukraine war. No, it ended 1 week after the invasion occurred. So the commodity move was for other reasons. And I think the reasons were monetary, and also asset managers around the world were assessing bloated paper assets,
right,
especially US, and totally imploded commodity assets.
Right.
And said, I'd rather be in the lower risk, higher reward category of commodities. And they were right. So they went into commodity related stocks and they did quite well, oil stocks, fertilizer stocks, and so forth.
Yeah, sure.
We think there's another leg coming. If you look at what's happened to commodities since that peak that occurred early in 2022, you made a low in June of 2022 that right now you're trading merely a point or so on the Bloomberg Commodity Index below that low.
Huh.
That's what, 7-8 months ago, it made a low, and we've only marginally taken that low out. So really, the correction that we've seen in commodities mostly ended last summer.
Yeah.
And since then, they've dawdled sideways to slight down. We'd watch the Bloomberg very carefully. Now, I don't think it's going to beat gold.
Mm.
I think it could participate with gold this time.
Good.
In other words, as gold engages in the next leg of its long-term bull market, the Bloomberg ignites a second leg,
mm-hmm.
bull leg.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it probably will be led not by energy complex, but by foods.
Oh, okay.
This time around.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's another area we're watching.
Yeah. And I mean, that makes a lot of sense, too. I was recently reading something from David Stockman. He was talking about the sticky part of inflation is not food and energy. Well, what's happened and what's helped the CPI in the last month or so has been the decline in energy prices, the decline in food prices to an extent. And that, you know, it's 30% of the CPI is in those areas. But the sticky part, the labor costs, rentals, you know, home costs, lodging costs, so forth, they're sticky and they're still rising. And David's view was that we'll see what I think you were just saying is a you know, another upsurge in commodity prices, which is likely to take inflation higher again. And that brings us then to the interest rate markets, Michael. And, you know, I mean, what are your technicals showing you on TLT, for example, right now?
Well, that's a long bond ETF. It's a 20-year plus maturity T-bond ETF. We also watch the 30-year T-bond futures. They're both in pretty good sync. We were bearish in 2021, okay? Meaning interest rates go up, price goes down. Mm-hmm. But last October, both of those markets reached what we call a target zone, meaning a likely area for a bounce. And in the case of TLT, that zone was from 98 to 95 in price. It got down, I think, under 94 briefly and shot up to 110. Oh. It was in December. It then pulled back and tried to go back up and re-achieve that 110 level again. Now, T-bonds actually took out that December high about a month ago. But they didn't do it. When they took it out, nothing happened. It was like a false price breakout, which we expected. We think the rally that we've seen in bonds and the pullback in yields is counter trend, meaning the major trend still favors higher rates, lower prices.
Right.
We don't trust this current rally. We did enough damage actually last week to begin to indicate to us that the rally that we've seen, the drop in yields we've seen recently, is over and that they're going to resume their downtrend, their rise in yields again. And that would sort of fit with that Bloomberg Commodity Index at some point re-engaging. Now, the Bloomberg right now is trading at 108.5 area.
Yeah.
Our bullish trigger signal is up in the 113. So we're not talking about 5 points between where it is right now and re-engaging to the upside. Mm-hmm. And I think when that happens, that's going to create some mind problems for the stock investors, for the Fed and so forth, because there's a point at which the tightening will create financial problems.
Yes.
That show up in data points. The data points are lagged to reality. So when you look at unemployment, forget it.
Right.
Look at it 6 months from now after the stock market goes down and makes a new low, then look at unemployment. Right. It'll do a catch up.
Right.
So the Fed is looking at that stuff, but they're also looking, like you said, at the CPI. And if we re-engage, and we even think natural gas, which has really been hit hard, and gasoline and oil could re-engage as well, but not as strong as food.
Yeah.
But if that happens, that's going to continue to put data point pressure on the Fed to continue a tough policy.
Yeah.
It's just what the stock people don't want to hear.
No.
We don't think that even if they continued with the tough policy, and I don't think they will, because I think that they are going to get some sensation from underneath the ground, vibrations from the financial sector, that things aren't really that good out there. You've tightened too much. You've gone too far. Mm-hmm. Sit back, watch. Don't do any more. They've already overshot.
Mm-hmm.
And I think to some extent, some of the Fed governors have even said, we need to sort of sit back and let things accumulate and see what happens here. We've already taken enough steps.
Right.
So, but anyway, I don't think this is going to impact gold negatively if the Fed did stay tight, because I think that the damage they would do by maintaining tightness or not getting loose again soon enough will endanger the paper assets further, such that, again, those who own the paper assets have to go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And last year was a heck of a statement year, because you had a 20% drop in S&P, 30+ in NASDAQ 100. Yeah. And silver closed up 3% on the year and gold was unchanged.
Right.
That was a statement.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. And well, you know, and of course, the interest rates, if they keep rising with the tremendous debt that the United States Treasury has, we can get up close to $1 trillion in interest rates, interest expense a year, which is like a third of the defense spending, a third of Social Security, that sort of thing. So there's that also that certainly, you know, comes into play, I would think, Michael.
Well, maybe, yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, some economists have pointed this out of various parts of the spectrum have pointed out that, hey, you know, this is not 2007, 2009. There's a lot of big differences in the background. Right. And the biggest one of all you just mentioned is debt.
Right.
Not just government debt.
Yeah.
Deficit, you know, to the GDP and so forth, but personal debt,
right.
Corporate debt. The debt situation in the world is far worse than it's ever been. And so if you start to bust the paper assets and start to raise yields, you rip open a crisis like we've not seen before. So don't expect merely a replication of the 2000, 2002, or the 2007, 2009 bear markets. Expect something bigger.
Yeah.
And I think gold knows that.
Yeah, I mean, my impression in chatting with you over the last year or so, Michael, is that you don't see this as an ordinary bear market, but something of a magnitude larger than what we've seen in the past. Do I have that right?
You got it right. And you know, we're watching the pieces as they bump into each other, because there's a lot of correlation between the markets now that's either inverse or coincident. And it used to be, you know, if you didn't like the stock market, you could go over and buy gold or T-bonds. And mm-hmm. they both would provide you with yeah. some protection. Now, you can't buy T-bonds. They did worse than stocks did last year. In fact, right. they did worse than they've done in a century, T-bonds. Okay. So pretty soon, whether you like something or don't like it, if it's not going down and everything else is, you have to move over to a safer yeah. area as an asset manager or a large portfolio owner. And so we watch the spread relationships. And again, some of them are coincident, some are inverse. But you've got to watch all the pieces of the puzzle. You can't just look at gold. Right. You have to look at these other things. And to the extent that these other assets, the bursting bubble of paper assets, rips open that debt crisis, whoa. I mean, all kinds of variables come into play.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I would just sort of sum it up by saying no place to run, no place to hide, Michael, within the fiat currency world anyway. It seems to be the case, and we've had Alistair MacLeod last week talking about the moves that are being made by Russia and China, our adversary nations that don't want to own dollars anymore. Well, we don't allow them to trade in dollars if they don't behave the way we want them to. So they have to, for their own sake, leave the dollar, and they're doing that. And there's mechanisms are set up now for those countries to start trading with gold-backed currencies. And it's happening, I think. And I don't think most Americans are aware at all of that. And my goodness, if the world goes into some sort of a quasi-gold standard, gold becomes prominent in the currency systems of this, of the Asian bloc anyway, then I think, things are going to change very dramatically. And I can't imagine what a weak dollar would mean. A dollar that nobody wants to own is going to mean for Americans in terms of inflation.
Yeah.
It would have to be catastrophic, I would think.
Yep. So that's one of the variables we're watching. The dollar had this spike. It really wasn't a bull move. It was more of a spike
uh-huh.
from early last year to early fourth quarter of last year, where the dollar went from there was a range of prices that had prevailed for 7 years, with the highs about 103 plus two
yes.
times. Blew through the 103, went up almost to 115, and did it quickly. When you look at the chart, it looks like some kind of, you know, daily type spike. It doesn't look like a normal market. So it was a panic buying process. But then we turned around and we traded down under 101 recently.
Yeah.
Right now we're trading back up to 103 plus. This rally, I think, is counter trend. But there's a level on the dollar index. And by the way, it's really sort of a silly index, because yeah. 57% of it's the euro. And I think 12 or 13% is the yen. So when you put those two together, over 70% of it, it's just two currencies. So
right.
you call that an index? Well, whatever. Right. You get down under 95 on the dollar. Now, remember, it just dropped from 115
yes.
to just under 101. So that's a 14-point drop. What we're saying is if you drop another 6 points below that recent low, we have a momentum structure that goes back a couple decades. And if you break that, the dollar's really going down.
Down hard.
Like back down to the all-time lows in the 70s and so forth.
Where was that, Michael? Where was that roughly?
Well, the lows of those prior decades were down in close to 70
right.
on the dollar index.
Right. Right.
And right now, but you got to remember, people think, gee, we've got up to one, we're now trading 103, that's strong. Dollar was 165 in 1985, and right now it's 103, and you say it's had decade by decade by decade, it has been in decay.
Right.
What we're talking about now is this last rally that hooked a lot of people psychologically and emotionally. I think they've been trapped. And I think once you go about another 5 or 6 points below the recent low, you're going to engage to the downside in a way that will really upset folks and be a major variable in a lot of markets.
You know, I would think it'd be extremely bullish for gold and the commodities, no doubt. The real things that you can't print out of thin air, you know, the paper markets that have been so devastating. I think the printing money, reallocating resources away from the private sector into the government's activities, basically reducing the you know, the part of the economy that actually creates wealth, the free market capitalism, which is has a lot of enemies these days. Michael, I know you could talk for hours about that, and but anyway, I want to thank you so much for spending time with us. Your insights always greatly appreciated, Michael, and we'll look forward to talking to you again sometime. So thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Jay.
All righty, folks. Well, that is it for this segment, but don't go away because Patrick Highsmith will join me in just a moment. So don't go away. Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really pleased to tell you that Patrick Highsmith is with me. Patrick is the president and CEO of Timberline Resources. He's a very experienced geologist, having spent many years with the big boys, Rio Tinto, BHP, Newmont, others as well. And now he's spending more time helping the juniors find these big deposits in the ground. And that's what his function is at Timberline Resources. Patrick also has had experience in the capital markets too, which comes in handy for sure for the smaller companies. Before I say hello to Patrick, I should tell you that the stock trades in the United States under the symbol TLRS. You can buy it in Canada under TBR. About 160 million shares outstanding, I believe, something like that. Recently selling at about 12 cents in U.S. money. That gives it a minuscule market cap, around $19 million. But don't let that fool you, because Timberline is on to some very exciting stories, a very exciting exploration targets, a Carlin-style gold discovery that they've made, and more recently, a silver-rich carbonate replacement system that really is, it's really close to the I-80 discovery, which is a really exciting discovery. We just heard from I-80 recently on this show. And this is the Eureka Project. It's along the Battle Mountain trend in Nevada, and so I'm really happy to tell you that Patrick is with us. Thanks for joining me again, Patrick.
Good to be here, Jay, on the new platform. Very exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting, and your story is very exciting. So I'd like to ask you, maybe for the sake of people that have not followed your story, maybe just a quick review of you know, the history of the company before you came into the picture and since, and what you've accomplished and what you're planning to do going forward.
Absolutely, Jay. Let me take folks through that story. I'm sharing a screen now. That'll help me not forget to say key things. As you said, Jay, Timberline Resources has been around for a while, since about 2004. So people have heard the name, and it's been through iterations where it was working in Idaho and Montana, for instance, on more advanced projects. But now we are a pure play focused on Nevada gold and silver exploration. And our primary focus has been at the Eureka Project in Nevada. But at the same time, the company does hold a couple of other projects in Nevada. But I think the key distinction I like to make, Jay, there's so much going on in Nevada. It's geologically so rich, of course, that I think it's important to remember that when you're looking at explorers in Nevada, there are these major trends that we know produce a lot of the gold, the Carlin trend, of course, the Battle Mountain Eureka trend. And Timberline holds a lot of ground, and our flagship project indeed is on the Battle Mountain Eureka trend. We have a large land holding there. We're the largest tenement holder in the Eureka district. We're the neighbor to the south of I-80 Gold Corporation. We have permits in place that facilitate a lot of drilling on that project, and there's a foundational resource there as well. As you said, we've been working through a new discovery called the Water Well Zone deposit. It is not a resource. It's still an earlier stage exploration project, but we see the growth potential there. And our news flow during 2021 and 2022 clearly showed an increase in these longer runs of higher grade mineralization, Jay. And that's really been some of the highlights that people have been following us for. But we've added some new targets, and we're going to be talking about one of those today, a place called New York Canyon. It's a huge property, almost 30 square miles there that we hold. And we're going to talk about a couple of different targets. But in essence, we're an exploration company with a 500,000 ounce measured and indicated resource at Eureka, but the growth potential to have multi-millions of ounces of gold on our projects. Mm-hmm. On this slide, I'm just showing folks to get you oriented around the state of Nevada. You can see the Eureka project there kind of near the center of the slide. That's the Battle Mountain Eureka trend. A couple of other projects we really don't have time to talk about today, but the Paiute Joint Venture, where Nevada Gold Mines is our 20% joint venture partner. We're the 80% partner just outside their giant Phoenix Fortitude complex up there. And then, of course, the Seven Troughs project over in the western part of Nevada. So I did mention, Jay, that Timberline is an explorer, and that has been our focus. But back in 2013, we published a resource where the Lookout Mountain deposit comes to surface. And in this slide, you can even see one of the historic open pits there as we outline more or less the footprint of this mineralization where it comes to surface. And it's not very much different than a lot of deposits we've seen in Nevada. It's as they start out sort of 30 million tons at 0.62 grams of gold. So there's a lot of low grade there. But within it, there was this high grade trend, Jay, that dips off to the east. And this is where you and I have been talking about. Just east of this is where the Water Well Zone sits in this area where we've been drilling for the last couple of years. Maybe the deeper, but also higher grade roots of that system that comes to surface.
Right.
Now, if I shift gears to a big picture view, this will segue into our conversation for today, where you're seeing a view of the Eureka project looking north. And at the top of the slide up here is I-80 Gold's Ruby Hill project,
right,
the historic mine and their ongoing exploration and development activities there. Of course, you see these same rocks come down into the Eureka project that mostly outlined in green here. And there you can see highlighted on that the Lookout Mountain resource area, the Water Well Zone, the Oswego target where we did a little bit of drilling last year. But you can see here, I've kind of circled with red to give you a tip, Jay, where did last week's news release came from? Inside that red box there up to the upper right.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the New York Canyon target that last week's news release was discussing. So maybe we'll move on and go over some of those highlights.
Yeah, please. I saw some spectacular numbers there, Patrick, and looking at the surface numbers that you reported last week. So, let's hear about it.
Yeah, and there is a geological story there, and a couple of slides are going to, I think, help out with the presentation of that. Here you can see, again, we've zoomed in on the claim map. So you see our claims outlined in black. And in blue there, Jay, what I'm trying to outline is, remember, Eureka was a silver district back in the day when it was discovered in the 1860s. And then the heyday that came there between the 1870s and the 1890s was focused on these carbonate replacement deposits. That's what CRD stands for.
Mm-hmm.
And I put a very loose outline of where most of the lead, zinc, silver production came from. And you'll note that it envelops just outside of the town of Eureka, our New York Canyon claim block here. Of course, I-80 Gold, much of their property was explored and produced some of that for lead, zinc, silver. The FAD shaft where Paycor Minerals is operating. So we're right up in the thick of things. And in actual fact, according to numerous accounts, the first claims staked in Eureka for the silver discovery were here on our New York Canyon claim block. And if you look closely, there's some red rectangles in there. Those are patented claims, many of which go back to the original claim staked in about 1862 in that canyon. Now, what happened here is we've been working several miles away down here at the Water Well Zone, drilling Carlin-type gold deposits and having some success there. But meanwhile, realizing that this is a complicated district we've talked about before, where there's this earlier silver, lead, zinc event in geologic time, it came first.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, the Carlin type gold, which both I-80 and ourselves have been drilling of late. And so you have these overlapping systems. And we've been working on a little bit of picking up a few claims here and there, Jay, and that was part of the news release last week, is this area in New York Canyon was a large claim block that we've controlled for some time, but there were some inline patented claims. We're only talking about like 30 or 40 acres, Jay, not a lot of ground. But those were historic claims that were patented and owned by private interests in some cases for many decades. So they hadn't even been explorable by the mining companies who were working here. And then, of course, the highlight we announced here is this table. These are rock sampling results. There was historic sampling here, Jay, from other companies, and we didn't rely on that at Timberline. We went out and assessed these targets ourselves.
Right.
Took our own samples over the last few years. And we learned that there's high-grade silver coming to surface here. You see values like 750 grams per ton, 558, 555 grams per ton silver at surface. And we also found, a little bit to our surprise, Jay, nice grades of gold. 15 grams, 23 grams, 32, up to 55 grams per ton at surface in rock samples. We then proceeded to approach some of these claim holders from, based on the historic data. We'd already had our discussions with some of these folks, we were able to acquire a few more of these claims, putting that jigsaw puzzle together, Jay, always getting more land. And in doing so, we now have picked up patented claims. And when we zoom in here a bit more, here's the New York Canyon claim block. And within it, you see some faint red outlines in here. These are the historic claims. Some of the mines that were on those claims, the 76 mine, one of the very first historic mines in the Eureka District, the Eureka mine, the Eureka Giant, that claim sits right in here. And we're showing superimposed on that just the highlights of the sampling. If you see a triangle there, that's a historical sample taken by a previous mining company, probably in the 80s or 90s. Mm-hmm. And then if you see a circle, those are Timberline samples where we came in, validated the historic work, got similar results, these high-grade silvers and golds that we've highlighted here. There's the 750 grams of silver. There's the 55 grams gold right in this area. And we just put those on this target map so folks could see too, Jay, here's Highway 50, okay? Right up here, this is actually our core shed and field office. So you're talking about, there's a scale bar down there, half a kilometer. We easily can walk from our field office to where these samples were taken. So great access. There's a dirt road coming through it. And again, this was a historic mining area. And sure, lead, zinc, silver was produced from here. We don't have that production data, but these were small historic mines. And they a lot of this area was not explored by modern explorers. You can see some drill holes here, Jay. These are, again, mostly 90s era, early 90s drill holes. We know who did them. We even spoke to the geologist who managed the project, and they were not able to acquire many of these patented claims. So they drilled around the patented claims in this area, and there's no drilling in the core area here of which Timberline is aware. So that makes this, these new results even more exciting.
Yeah, and your CRD discovery there is very close. I think it must be within 4 kilometers of I-80's Ruby Hill, right?
Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that.
I mentioned that in the news release.
You can see on this map, the Ruby Hill drilling for their base metals in particular, that high-grade lead, zinc, silver they've been hitting is on the south end of the historic pit here. That's about 3 kilometers into our New York Canyon area. Paycor's been working at the FAD shaft here. That's a little over 2 kilometers. So we're right in the thick of that historic district. There's a lot going on around us, and we see the excitement that that a polymetallic system might bring to a project like Eureka. If you had both a gold high-grade gold here producing, and of course high-grade silver, and I-80 Gold is talking about in their future plans developing a base metal production with a concentrator, so they could make lead and zinc concentrates, which would contain all that gold and silver. And for that, you can ship off to a smelter and get paid that way. So to have potential processing infrastructure in the camp makes this New York Canyon target even more exciting to us.
Yeah, maybe it's getting in the weeds a little bit, Patrick, for this discussion, but I'm just wondering if you have a theory as to, you didn't expect to find the gold here in the CRD system. Is it sort of an overlap of the of another system, or how do you account for it?
That's right. I'll try not to get too geological, but this slide tells some of the story, Jay. Now, if you go back to the history, and there are some great historical papers and books that include discussions of Eureka, we knew then that the silver, lead, zinc systems had a bit of gold with them, even in the 1800s. And that's a little bit surprising. Most CRD deposits are enriched in gold a little bit, Jay, but not this much. So there was always this sort of anomalous amount of gold hanging around. And as we've discussed in the past, we know that about 100 million years ago is probably when these silver, lead, zinc deposits were formed. But then there was a Carlin-type gold event about 40 million years ago. Uh-huh. Still a long time ago, but that's a big gap between those two systems. And they overlap for sure, Jay. And the evidence is shown here on this slide, as a matter of fact. This is our claim block. There's the road that comes through this area. And in this area, we've been working. We mentioned some of these are historic patented claims. There's some of the high-grade gold and silver numbers. But notice how these warm colors, they kind of align in a northwesterly direction. We've mapped these faults here, Jay. We've had our own geologists out verifying the historic mapping here. And we see that most of these are aligned along this northwest orientation. And even some of the claims, like this one and this one, are aligned in a northwesterly direction because those prospectors figured this out. Mm-hmm. And those are probably related to these faults. And a fault is just a crack. Jay, and a fault is a crack that has moved, okay? And in this case, that crack may well be bringing the high grades to surface. And it could mean that there are systems at depth that were not tested by the historic miners mm-hmm. because those rocks would have been too deep. They might have been below the water table. So for instance, this blue unit here, this is called the Poganip Group. It includes Goodwin and Nine Mile formations, which you've heard me talk about before, because those are the host rocks up at I-80 Gold, some of the host rocks. Uh-huh. These rocks, they dip to the east, Jay. They dip like this across this slide. And that means if there's high-grade gold and silver over here and there's a fault here, these rocks may be down underneath it. Uh-huh. And so we have a host rock at surface called the Hanson Creek. That's this pinkish unit. And it's a good host for both gold and silver. And we intend to get after it and go test that Hanson Creek, and we'll be drilling that target. And that's right at surface, which is fantastic. However, this is another good host rock that dips underneath it. And those cracks might be the plumbing that make a larger volume target beneath. Maybe it won't be these spectacular high grades because it's more spread out over bigger volume. Uh-huh. But that crack is what's so juicy. And so we're definitely going to follow up by getting in here this year, Jay, and mm-hmm. getting a drill out here and getting to work on these patented claims in particular in the New York Canyon area, where we produce these high-grade results at surface. We have a good host rock at surface, but there's also considerable depth potential because these systems did, just as you suggested, that the silver came first, and then the gold came through some of the same plumbing as you've heard me talking about for the last year down at the water well zone.
Right. So do you expect that you'll be spending more time on more resources on the CRD discovery or on the Carlin, or do you have plans yet in terms of how you're going to allocate your financial resources?
It's a great question, and I wish I had a crystal ball, but the best thing I can say, Jay, is this is why junior companies are great explorers, because guess what? We can be super nimble. I don't have to go through three departments of geologists to decide which we like better, the silver or the gold. Yeah. When Steve and I get together with the team, and we look at our results, we get to drive our exploration in that direction from which we're getting the most fruitful results. So I can tell you this, our plans in 2023, we're going to add at least two prongs now to our attack at the Eureka Project. Of course, when you drill 40 meters of 5 grams, as we did at Waterwell Zone, and we know that's still open to the east and to the south, we know we're going to be drilling at the Waterwell Zone. But as I said, we've got patented claims with a road right through it, just out of town. It's also at lower elevation, Jay, so it gets less mm-hmm. snow here at New York Canyon. Uh-huh. So we will be exploring for the silver, lead, zinc. We will very likely be drilling here. Of course, there's a little bit of permitting paperwork to do whenever you disturb any ground, but this is, we now own the surface and the minerals for these patented claims.
Patented claims,
we can therefore permit quickly. So I would say that we'll be listening, you know, closely to our results. How are the results coming in? And that'll direct our priorities. I would say that the scale of the Carlin type targets is so big here that one shouldn't lose sight of that. Mm-hmm. But high grade, silver, lead, zinc in the heart of the CRD district with our neighbors also exploring for that, it's going to get its due consideration, Jay.
Right, for sure. Well, it's going to be exciting, no doubt about it. And we look forward to your press release outlining your exploration program for this year. Maybe just tell us who your major shareholders are, Patrick.
Yes, folks can have a look at the website and see our presentation and learn more about the team, of course. And among the team is a significant shareholding at the board level. I think we own about 16 or 17% at the board level, Jay. And then right behind that, I believe Crescat Capital would be our largest outside shareholder at over 10% they own. So they're very supportive, and they've seen these results and we've chatted about them, and they're excited too to see the silver, lead, zinc moving forward. It's high grade. We all like grade, of course. And then behind that would be, I think, Jupiter Gold and Silver Fund out of London, Jay, at around 9.9% of the company. They were a major leader in last year's significant financing. So Jupiter's a relatively new shareholder, and they still hold just under 10%.
Wonderful. Well, it's really an exciting story, Patrick. I want to thank you so much for sharing it with us. And we'll look to keep up with this story going forward. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Folks should look for a bit of news flow between now and PDAC. We usually in the first quarter outline our work program, and I expect you're going to see us pursuing both Carlin type gold and CRD deposits here at the Eureka Project.
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to it. Thank you very much. Well, folks, if you like this video, be sure to hit the like button and subscribe to this channel. That's it for this week. Next week, John Rubino will be back. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.